This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
For Wheeler, rolled off the wall, put it back to where the line, slap shot by Kulikov, he scores! For Scheifele, back out in front for Connor, a shot, he scores! Team leading 32nd of the year, get up, get down with the quickness! Ovechkin, slap shot right on, and it's stopped by Hellebuck. He hustles inside the zone, to the empty net, he scores! Mark Scheifele, the horn sounds, and they do it in shutout fashion here tonight over the Washington Capitals. And for Connor Hellebuck, his league-leading fifth shutout of the year.
On a night that the Jets needed to win, on a night that the Jets needed their best players to be their best players, they got all of that on Thursday night against the Washington Capitals, ending their three-game losing streak, feeling good about themselves on home ice with a convincing 3-0 victory over those Washington Capitals. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates will apply. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
If it's Saturday, it's another show that Dave Minuk is missing.
Dave, away from the program this morning. I believe he's enjoying some time in the sun.
What's going on here? This is the third Saturday this month, and February is a short month.
Oh, he's
done one show.
That's okay. I haven't heard a clamoring from the audience that's saying, you know, we need more Dave. I haven't heard a groundswell of grassroots people rising up and saying, we need Dave.
That's actually not true. I hear that all the time.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. Dave is the most popular member of Illegal Curve. It's not even close.
Yeah, but that's a really low bar to achieve.
It's true.
I mean, it's not, you know, that's not a big hurdle to overcome, saying you're more popular than either yourself or myself.
It's kind of like being like the best of the stinky farts, right?
Yeah, if you want to go with that, I mean, sure. I thought the way I said it was a lot better than the way you said it, but whatever floats your boat there, my friend. In any event, the Winnipeg Jets, you know, struggling this week for the most part. When we last joined you last Saturday, we talked about the key games in Philadelphia and then again Sunday in Buffalo, and the performances in those two contests were not good enough. And as a result, the Jets dropped both those games in Philly against a very good Philadelphia Flyers team and then against the Buffalo Sabres, certainly not as good a team. And the Jets, you know, had significant regrets over losing those two games.
Well, and then yesterday losing to Vegas, right? They lost 4-2. I'm talking about Buffalo.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever slim hopes they had of making the playoffs, like they're what, 10 points back now?
They're not
like
they never had any realistic hopes. But the Jets,
Rangers, on the other hand,
well, they lost Chris Kreider yesterday with a broken foot, so that certainly hurts.
The fact that they're in it, Drew, is
incredible run. Yeah. And we'll talk about the playoffs and we'll talk about the standings throughout
9-1 in their last 10.
Throughout the course of the next 3 hours, of course. But you know, the Jets last week, Saturday, Sunday, bad performances. Then they start off very slow on Tuesday night against the Washington Capitals, and it's a 3-0 game, you know, midway through the second period. And I got to tell you, Mr. Ginsberg, I didn't have any reason to believe watching that performance that this Jets team was going to come back. They were lethargic. They were outclassed probably for the first 35 minutes of that game against the Washington Capitals on Tuesday night. And then lo and behold, they get that late second period goal where Braden Holtby, it's a simple shot. You can't give up that rebound and have it drop right next to you where you don't know where the puck is and you lose track of everything. You can't let that happen. Gives the Jets some life going into the third period, and then full marks for the Jets. Sure, they lose in the shootout, but you come back from that 3-goal deficit. You get that 1 point, and yes, they needed 2 on Tuesday night, but they got the 1 where nobody really expected them to get the 1, and then they piggyback on that good effort Thursday night to get the clean 2 points, hugely important on home ice against the Capitals entering tonight's contest against the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, and going back to Tuesday, I loved how Paul Maurice put out Scheifele, Connor, and Wheeler, like going with the rare three forwards and
to start overtime.
Yeah, and why not, right? Like, there's no reason not to do that. I mean, you know there's going to be odd man rushes. You heard earlier this week Carey Price talking about 3-on-3 overtime when they asked him, you know, what they thought of Tyler Toffoli's winning goal. Like, he doesn't like overtime, and especially when the goalie loses, he doesn't like overtime, but that's just the nature of it, right? So I just like that Paul Maurice went with Scheifele, Connor, and Wheeler, and obviously they continued their hot play from Tuesday into Thursday night, and, you know, just focusing on Thursday night, because I agree with you, Drew, like, it looked like the Jets were going to lose, and not just lose, it looked like that could have been a 4-0, you know, 5-2 game Tuesday night.
Tuesday night's
right?
game, yes.
But that game on Thursday night was one of their better games of the year. I wouldn't go as far to say it was the best.
It's in the top five.
Sure, whatever you want to say. It was a really good game, but that Washington Capitals team is a really good team. I don't know if they're the best team in the Eastern Conference, because I would put Boston and probably Tampa Bay in front of them, but you like the fact that they got the first goal, and you heard about that, and I think the Jets players were sick of talking about the fact that they'd given up the goal in 9 straight games, and we all know the Jets record is much better when they get that first goal, and they're basically undefeated. They've lost one game when they're leading after 2, right? Mm-hmm. So you knew that the Jets going into that third period, even though it was only a 1-goal lead, you knew there was a good chance, and you never got the feeling, I thought, in that game that the Jets were going to lose that game. Like, I just thought the way that they were playing, especially the way Connor Hellebuck was playing, and we can get into that later, because, I mean, that was one of those games where it wasn't a 50-save shutout, but it was just a really solid, you know, 28-save, whatever shutout it was.
His rebound control on Thursday night, like, he was great, Connor Hellebuck was, on Thursday night, but the most impressive part to me was his rebound control, because there basically wasn't.
Right.
There weren't, that I can think of, weren't any second chance opportunities for the Washington Capitals.
He just looked like, Drew, he was in that zone.
Yes.
And we've seen Hellebuck in that zone so many times over the last 3 years. I mean, we saw it 2 years ago when he was a Vezina finalist. And I mean, unless something unforeseen happens, you got to think Hellebuck is going to be one of those 3 Vezina finalists. It's like, what is he up to right now? He's up to 51 starts, right? He's probably going to get, you know, right around 60 starts in this year.
Yeah, probably more given where the Jets, you know, are in the playoff races. It's hard to believe that, you know, I think we were talking about this on the pregame show on Thursday. I think we said, what, Brassois maybe gets 1 or 2 starts, you know, because the Jets need Hellebuck at that point, you know, from now until the end of the regular season.
Right, and obviously you had Hellebuck going back-to-back, and, you know, Lauren Brassois, I thought, did a really good job against Washington. I mean, that was a part of that game that I didn't think really got enough talk. I mean, it might have gotten, you know, some talk on the postgame show and, you know, in the Jets room, but Lauren Brassois was really solid because he hasn't had the same year that he had last year.
No question.
You know, and it's not just the wins and it's not just the statistics, but I just don't think Brassois has got into that same groove. Like last year, he started off the season well, and sure, yeah, he might only get 1, 2, 3 starts. I mean, I would be shocked if he got more than 3 or 4 starts, and that's because Hellebuck has been so good. There's no reason not to go with him.
The Jets need to run their best players, and I that's what I think you saw on Thursday night. That was what stood out to me the most for one of the first times this season, the line of Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler, and I know they haven't played together all together, you know, for the vast majority of the season. They've been split up, and we know all that. But Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler, from puck drop, they controlled the game when they were on the ice. You know, the opening couple shifts that they had on the ice. And remember, the Jets lost Patrick Laine very early in that game, so there was always
it was his first shift, wasn't it?
Yeah. 21 seconds into the first shift of the game for him. So there was a lot of, you know, rotation to the Jets forward group and a bit of line juggling throughout the entirety of the contest. But Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler imposed their will on the opponents for one of the first times this season from the first shift. And that's why I think, Ezzie, to your point, it was so important for the Jets to get that opening goal, because they were that good in the first 5 minutes of that game where the ice was heavily tilted in the favor of the Jets, that had the Capitals got the first goal, and they had some opportunities certainly, but Hellebuck was just as good. If the Capitals score before Kulikov gets the opening goal, it's demoralizing for the Jets given the way they started that game. Instead, what happens? They get rewarded on a bit of a seeing eye shot from Dmitry Kulikov, but he gets full marks for the goal. And it's a 1-0 game, and that 1-0 game stands up all the way almost until the midway point of the third period. And a lot of that had to do with Connor Hellebuck, because there were times where the Jets were on their heels, as you would expect in the course of a game flow, especially against a very good Washington Capitals team and a very dangerous Washington Capitals team. And Connor Hellebuck, to your point, was in that zone where he was saying to his teammates, look, nothing's going to get past me until you can get us an insurance goal, and then nothing even got past them, past him after that point in time.
Right, and I realize, you know, a lot of people are talking about the Jets' penalty kill and how good it's been since February 1st. And
since January 1st, top in the league in 2020.
But if you really want to look at, you know, that quote-unquote TSN turning point, right, like you look at those penalties, I think it was Neil Pionk and Anthony Boteto, right?
4 minutes, basically, it was a two-minute minor penalty.
Right.
To Pionk. 3 seconds elapsed after he came on the ice. And
back
then,
to back, right?
And then Boteto took his hooking penalty.
And that not only did the Jets kill those penalties off, like they killed them off with authority, right? Like the Capitals, you can say whatever you want about the Capitals, and I realize right now they're third in the East, but I mean, they're only 1 point back of Tampa Bay right now.
That's a good hockey team.
It's unbelievable. And, you know, you mentioned the Scheifele line. We know that Scheifele's got 11 points in his last six games, and Scheifele, Connor, and Wheeler, I mean, they're going to stay together for the foreseeable future. And, you know, Scheifele going up against Backstrom's lines, obviously Kuznetsov and Ovechkin and Tom Wilson, that's your top line. But, you know, Drew, the Capitals basically have 1A, 1B.
Yeah.
And now that they've got Ilya Kovalchuk, I mean, you can have him
he
on your third line.
He sort of looks rejuvenated, doesn't he?
Well, I mean, at this point in his career, he's not a 40-goal guy, right?
No,
like,
no.
At this point, he's more of a power play specialist. But, you know, Lars Eller, Carl Hagelin, and Ilya Kovalchuk, that looks like a really good third line to me, right? Like, you've got skill, you've got speed. Lars Eller's a really good defensive center. Like, this team, I mean, and the Jets were talking about this, you know, after the game and before the game. Blake Wheeler, you know, Nikolai Ehlers, Hellebuck. I mean, it was only 2 years ago that this team won the Stanley Cup. So if you don't have the Capitals as a Stanley Cup contender, you obviously haven't been following them this year, right? And like I said, I mean, for me, Boston is the best team in the league, and Tampa Bay is obviously super dangerous. But like, Washington is right up there. Like, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Washington goes on a long playoff run. And yeah, Connor Hellebuck obviously outplays Ilya Samsonov, and you know, Braden Holtby right now is the backup, and his future most likely is with another NHL team. But you know, you talk about Cody Eakin, I mean, that line going up against the Kuznetsov line, even without Line A, I thought fared really well. So just overall a really impressive game, because if you think about it, Drew, if the Jets lose this game, right, like if they don't get any points in this game,
four in a row,
they basically have to go 12-5 to make the playoffs.
And they still might have to go 12-5 to make the playoffs anyways, but you can't lose at this stage in the season, you know, the last couple days of February, when you're fighting tooth and nail. You can't afford to lose four games in a row. And that's what it was going to be had they not got the victory on Thursday night. Sure, you get the point on Tuesday night in Washington, and it's almost like you're stealing a point given that you're down 3-0. But you have to have a good showing on home ice. You need to continue that good showing tonight against McDavid and Dreisaitl, and you know, and a dangerous Edmonton Oilers
and
team.
Cassian,
McDavid and Dreisaitl. But you know, the Jets needed that performance from their top players, and they got it. And that's what you know they have to you have to take heart in that going forward, that this is the performance, the kind of performance they're going to need from their best players, basically night in and night out. You heard Connor Hellebuck post game. He said, you know what? We need more of this because we're in the playoffs now. This is playoffs for the Winnipeg Jets.
You know, and Scheifele, Connor, Wheeler, I agree with you. Like, they deserve all the accolades, but, and, you know, I'm sure that you guys were talking about this on the post game show Thursday night. Like, It's the team effort, right? Like, it's Nathan Beaulieu playing 25 minutes.
Blocking, seven or eight shots on.
Like Dmitry Kulikov, to me, like that, like the goal aside, like Dmitry Kulikov, like what did he play? I think he was around 22 or 23 minutes or something like that. Like 22 minutes. There you go. So that's what you want to see from these guys, right? Like, when you don't have the, like, Drew, if you would have told most hockey fans that the Jets, without Josh Morrissey, without Patrick Laine, without Sammy Niku, you throw in Adam Lowry, Matty Perreault, they're out of the lineup, and you're going against a top team in the East. I mean, you'll take that win all day long.
The more desperate team played like the more desperate team. And sometimes desperation is a great motivator, because the Jets were desperate on Thursday night. They performed like a desperate team, and they came away with a victory as a result. So you have to keep that going. You just got to keep that desperation. You have to keep that do anything to sacrifice for your team mentality going forward, game in and game out. And the Jets, you know, are fortunate, for lack of a better word right now, in that they do have a little bit of time in between games. So they were desperate on Thursday night. You don't play again till Saturday. You're desperate tonight. You don't play again till Tuesday. You're desperate on Tuesday. You don't play again till Friday. You have a little bit of time in which to recover from the desperation, because you're going to be theoretically expending more energy in the face of that desperation. And that's what the Jets need to take to heart game in and game out from now through the first week of April, if the games matter that long.
You know, I like to break down the Jets games or the Jets season into five game segments, right? So they've got 17 games left. So obviously it's not, you know, perfect multiples of five.
It's true.
But if you look at the last 17 games, the way I look at it, you basically have to win 3 of 5. You're going to have to probably go 11-6, or you're probably going to have to go 10-5-2. Right? You need 20 points. Right now, the playoff line is expected to be somewhere around 90 to 92 points, right?
Yeah.
So it's not going to be 95 or 96, or you remember 2015, it was 99 points.
Yeah.
But to get to
that's not going to be that.
To get to 92 points, Drew,
yeah,
you need 20 points, right? So that's 10 wins, right? Or like I said, 9-5-2,
right? 10 wins in your last 16 games. You know, basically, you know, you're going to have to win at a clip of about 65%.
Sorry, 10-5-2 is what I meant.
Right.
Basically, you have to go 11-6.
They have 16 games left.
Pardon me. They have 16 games left. So you're going to have to go 10-6.
Yeah. 10-5-1.
Right.
You know, 10-4-2, something like that. You need to get...
Sorry, I forgot there were 16 games left.
Okay, so you need to get 20 points. Right. You're absolutely right. And, you know, every missed opportunity is somewhere else you're going to have to find 2 points. I mean,
so you mentioned the Edmonton game, right, tonight. And obviously, you want to win these games. You want to win all these games. But, you know, you basically have to win 2 of 3. You have to beat Edmonton and either beat Buffalo or lose to Buffalo, beat Vegas. Like, it's not going to be easy. And I know what you're saying. You don't have any back-to-back games here. You have a couple of days between games. But that's basically how you have to look at this. And you're right. I mean, they got a point against Washington Tuesday night. They got 3 of 4 points. But they got no points the previous two games. So basically, you don't have that much margin for error. So 10-6, is it doable? It's absolutely doable. But, I mean, that would be a slightly higher winning percentage than you've had all year long, right? So it's going to be tough. But, you know, I do think the Jets can do it. But again, we always say this, but it starts with tonight and, you know, it continues on with Buffalo. You can't win a game, lose a game. That's not going
to
cut it.
You're absolutely right. Two-thirds, that's what you need to do to win if the Jets want to be a playoff team come the first week of April. When we come back, we talk about some of the forward lines. Cody Eakin getting acquired later towards the trade deadline, and then all of a sudden he's the Jets' second-line center as of late. Talk about that decision. Talk about some of the deployment of the forwards. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Oh, it's just the same thing I said the first time. He's a gamer, good on faceoffs, hard on plays. He can make some plays with these guys. You know, he can skate with them, and he's a good pro.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice talking about Cody Eakin from a little bit of the scrap heap where he wasn't a key member of the Vegas Golden Knights anymore to back playing a prominent role in his hometown of Winnipeg. It's been a remarkable and quick turnaround for the Winnipeg Jets center, Cody Eakin. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. The weather's turning. It's getting to be real estate season. Give Frank and Mauro a call. Check them out online. That's zappiagroup.com for all your spring, summer, home buying, home selling needs. That's Frank and Mauro Zappia. Ezzy, let's talk about Cody Eakin. As a Jets second line center all of a sudden.
Good Winnipeg boy.
He is a good Winnipeg boy. That's very true. What about it, though? I mean, this is a guy who was having a pretty bad year in Vegas. You know, based on the eye test, based on the numbers, based on the advanced stats, whatever your preference is.
Also, though, usage, right? Like, Cody Eakin was playing a prominent role a couple years ago as the third line center, and then he was... then moved to the wing, and he was playing on the fourth line. He was also scratched.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have to throw that in as well. I realize...
But his usage was what it was because he wasn't performing.
Well, I mean, you can look at it two ways. You can say, was he struggling because of his usage? Like, look at Jack Roslovic, right? Like Jack Roslovic last year, we were talking about how he needed to be a top six forward, right? Mm-hmm. But he was a third line guy and he was a fourth line guy. So was he struggling because, you know, he was a third line guy or a fourth line guy? Like there's no right answer, right? Like it's the same thing as saying, like, is a coach responsible for why a team isn't doing well, right? Like, were the Sharks struggling because Pete DeBoer isn't a good coach? Like, were the Devils struggling because John Hines isn't a good coach? I would say that goaltending had a little bit of a part to do with it. All I'm saying is, I think Eakin's struggling, but I do think you can't just say, you know, he wasn't playing well. That's all I'm saying. I think there were other factors at play. And look at Drew. Like, right now, he's playing second-line center. Do I think Cody Eakin should be the Jets' second-line center? Well, if he is their second-line center, they're probably not going to win a playoff round. Put it that way. And that's simply because he's not as talented as other options that you have.
So let's talk about those other options. And that's basically right now Jack Roslovic or Andrew Kopp. Those are the other guys who are centermen on the Jets team. You know, Kopp playing up the middle on the third line right now, and Roslovic bouncing back and forth from center to wing to center to wing.
Right, and now he's back on the wing. And like, we have to give Paul Maurice credit, because I do think Maurice has done a good job with his Jets team, and I realize that, you know, there's a significant part of the Jets fan base, you know, that would disagree with me here, but, you know, when you look at, you know, all the injuries the Jets have, like, not having Adam Lowry and Matty Perreault, and, you know, by the way, like, when are these guys coming back? Like, we thought they were going to come back, you know, a week ago, and we just don't know. Like, Matty Perreault, we hear, is coming back, you know, earlier, before Adam Lowry. But to me, I mean, Adam Lowry has a bigger role on this team. No disrespect to Matty Perreault, and I realize that both players have struggled offensively, but, I mean, Adam Lowry, if healthy, I mean, that's your fourth line center, right?
In my mind, yes.
So right now, I mean, Andrew Kopp to me is your best option at second line center. Like, if it's between
Kopp
those players,
over Roslovic?
Yeah, and the reason is because, I mean, what has Jack Roslovic done? Is your, like, he has been given limited time in the NHL at center.
Yes, and almost no time.
Right,
not enough time where you can even make a fair evaluation of his time at center.
Right, and he had a significant time on the second line on the wing, and he played well at times. And like, to me, if you have Jack Roslovic on your third line, like, the Jets have a few things to figure out, because Nikolaj Ehlers has been playing some time on the third line.
It's crazy.
And he's been playing some time on the second line. Now, you can't have Nikolaj Ehlers on your third line. Like, I'm sorry. I am with all of those people, those vocal people on Twitter. I put me in the camp of Nikolaj Ehlers is the most talented player. Like, you can't have him playing reduced minutes. He should be out there on your top power play, at the very least your second power play.
Well, the second power play doesn't get any time, though. So, I mean, even the second power play is almost, you know, when the first power play gets a minute 40, the second power play maybe gets opportunity for to set up once in the offensive zone, I mean, and maybe take one shot.
We've talked about this. Yes. I mean, Dave Minuk had a long article on illegalcurve.com when you're talking about zone entries, like Mike Kelly of The Point Hockey, Sean Tierney of Charting Hockey has talked about this. Like, when you're talking about play driving, zone entries, possession, analytics, Nikolaj Ehlers, it's
never
shown that, that he's number
never
one.
Never mind the analytics argument. You watch Nikolaj Ehlers play hockey.
Sure.
And you see him gaining the zone easily.
No, he's the most skilled guy on the team. I mean, Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine, Mark Scheifele, these are all talented players. So it's not like we're saying, you know, Ehlers is, you know, head and shoulders above of these other guys.
But he needs to play an expanded role.
So, you know, I'm going on a little tangent here, but my point is you have to figure out, you know, you can't keep yo-yoing Nikolaj Ehlers from the second line to the third line. Like, Ehlers and Laine, we know, have not worked together on opposite wings. Right? You agree with that?
With the exception of the success they had with Paul Stastny, yes.
Right. And that's a very small sample size, right? Like, sure. You're talking about like 25, 30 games, right?
Yes.
I agree with you. I mean, Stastny was the perfect guy. But so you have to figure out what you're doing, because Laine is not going to be a third line guy.
No.
So to me, I mean... I think you want to go back to something like Connor, Kopp, and Laine. And you want to have Ehlers with Scheifele and Wheeler. Like, the Jets, it's almost like the Jets, and to Paul Maurice's, you know, detriment maybe, they've created problems by having success with that line, right? Because you look at that top line, Drew, and you say, well, you can't break up Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, and Blake Wheeler, right? But if you're not going to do that, then almost by default, you have to have Nick Ehlers and Patrick Laine on the same line, and then you have to have somebody between them. So for me, it's for me right now, based on, you know, the way the Jets roster is constructed, you don't have Adam Lowry, right? You don't have Matty Perreault. You might not have Patty Laine tonight. Like, to me, Scheifele and Wheeler, you keep together. Mm-hmm. You can't go back to Blake Wheeler at center after you've had Wheeler on the wing for how many games now? Five?
It's, you know, he was a stopgap measure.
Right.
And he was an effective stopgap measure at times. And now with 16 games to go in the regular season, you need him playing in the position where he's most effective. And he is most effective as your right winger, not as your centerman.
When Patrick Laine is healthy, and hopefully he can play tonight, I think you go Ehlers, Scheifele, Wheeler, and then you go Connor, Kopp, Laine.
I have no objection to that at all. And I think your third line of Harkins, Roslovic, Appleton, or if it's Harkins, Kopp, Appleton, is going to work regardless. Say Roslovic moves into that second line center role, and you go with Harkins, Kopp, and Appleton, I think that's going to be an effective line regardless. Cody Eakin makes your fourth line way better, more effective.
Right.
I don't think that Cody Eakin makes your second line any better.
And he has done a good job. Like he is, I think, a stopgap at second line center, right? Because you have to figure out, you know, you had Jansen Harkins, you know, up playing on the top line. Like, I've really liked Harkins. So to me, Harkins can play on your third or fourth line. But I think what you're looking for is just some consistency in terms of the lines that you have for 3, 4, 5 game stretches, right? And that's what concerns me a little bit, because yes, Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler, they're reunited. They're playing really well together. But if you think about it, were there any other lines that were that good in those games against Washington? Like, I would argue not really. Well, like, they were really the only good line that could go out there.
With the asterisk being that you lose Line A, so you're cycling players basically throughout your lineup after that. So, I mean, you can't take... I don't think you can take Thursday's game as a real good example, aside from the Connor, Scheifele, Wheeler line, because everything below that was a little bit scrambled.
Yeah, but Drew, the Jets haven't had a fourth line that has scored all year long.
That's why I think you need to put Cody Eakin there. I think Cody Eakin helps your fourth line.
No, I'm with you.
I know I'm repeating myself. I don't see what he brings to the second line, whereas a guy like Roslovic would, I think, have an opportunity to help your second line and contribute offensively to your second line. And it doesn't hurt your third line to move to have it as Harkins, Kopp, and Appleton or something like that.
I think the only issue, Drew, you're having is you're in game, what is it, 64, 65 of the season?
This is game 67 tonight.
Game 60. Yeah, 67, I guess.
I mean, yeah, you're only, you know... Son of a math teacher.
I've been getting up very
simple
early.
Math isn't your strong suit today.
But so in game 67 of the season,
yeah,
you're all of a sudden going to decide Jack Roslovic is your second line center with all of those defensive responsibilities, right? Like, Cody Eakin's line went up against Kuznetsov's line.
Even if it's Andrew Kopp as your second line center, I'm fine with that.
That's what I'm saying. I would prefer, and I realized, like, you know, right now we're having this argument, and you know it's possible that, you know, Cody Eakin is again the second line center.
I think he
tonight,
will be. I expect
right?
he will be.
But I think if you want the player that the stats show you is going to give you the most success, it's going to be Andrew Kopp.
And if I had to power rank who I want as my second line center for the Jets right now, I would say that 1A and 1B are Kopp and Roslovic, and then a clear number 3 is Cody Eakin. But I suspect he's going to be second line center tonight against the Oilers. Time will tell. When we come back, Ken Wiebe of The Athletic is going to join us. He's in Edmonton for tonight's contest. He joins us from the so-called City of Champions to set up tonight's contest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Producer Sean Asori doing a great job behind the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in the studio via Twitter as well. And you can also remember to check out our website. It's got the latest Jets and Moose news at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to Edmonton, where Ken Wiebe is on the line preparing for tonight's contest between the Jets and the Oilers. Kenny, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning to the Curves. How's it going there?
We're doing very well, Kenny. How are things in Edmonton? Is it a beautiful Saturday morning there?
Well, it was nice yesterday, around 0 degrees. Today it's a little overcast, but pleasant for this time of year. I've been here at this time of year when it's been a lot colder, so we'll take it.
There you go, exactly. We'll take it and hopefully send that weather west so that we can keep enjoying some nice warmer temperatures as well. Kenny, obviously, you know, we're talking about the Jets. It's another, you know, must-win game. Basically, from here on out, they're all must-win games. And last segment, we were talking about Cody Eakin and, you know, his new deployment as the Jets' second-line center, you know, theoretically between Nikolai Ehlers and Patrick Laine. But we'll see if that comes to pass later on this morning when Laine, if he's able to hit the ice or not. What are your thoughts? The Jets get him from Vegas sort of late, you know, towards the trade deadline. He wasn't playing a prominent role in Vegas, and all of a sudden he's slotted in at number 2C for the Jets. Is he the guy that you would choose to have playing in that role right now?
Well, I think, Drew, without Adam Lowry, and I think we have to rethink our thinking when it comes to the two, because, I mean, we know that Andrew Copp's line is coming out over the bench second, so I know where you're coming from in terms of, are you going to play Cody Eakin with the skilled guys, but right now, that young line is, or young plus Andrew Copp is playing more of a shutdown role. So, and the other part of that equation too is, to me, this is like when Joel Quenneville had Patrick Kane on the third, going over the boards third. They're looking to get mismatches happening against the opponent. So, in terms of Cody Eakin's play, I think he's provided some energy. What he does is provide the Jets with a little bit more, you know, feistiness. He's on the puck a lot. He finishes all of his checks, and he kind of brings guys into the fight, for lack of a better term, on a team that has used that phrase probably a little bit too much for some people's liking. But I think Cody's really provided a boost. I mean, is he a skilled playmaker like Paul Stastny or, I mean, even Kevin Hayes? No, but what you get out of Cody Eakin is everything that he has. And, I mean, right now I think, based on the Jets trying to get Mark Scheifele going by playing him with his regular line mates, I have no issue at all with the deployment. Should the Jets try to get Nikolai Ehlers a little bit more ice time because he's a prominent scorer? Yes, but right now, until Adam Lowry's back, I think this is probably their best way to roll, unless they're going to play Ehlers on that top line, which right now they aren't, because they need to get Mark Scheifele going, and he was going the last game, so I thought that was Mark's best game, you know, in months, not just because he was on the board, but, the play, the extra effort he makes to find Kyle Connor in front. I mean, that's the kind of effort that the Jets require from Mark Scheifele during the stretch run. He needs to be a two-way player, and that's exactly what he was. His engagement level was super high. And with all that being considered, I mean, I can understand why some people would like things another way, but right now the Jets don't have a naturally gifted playmaking center to play with Laine and Ehlers. So that's why they're going with the way it is right now.
I should make mention that you wrote about Cody Eakin for The Athletic. It's an article that's up on The Athletic right now. So what did you find out in talking to him? Obviously, he comes from Vegas back to his hometown of Winnipeg. What did you find out talking to Cody Eakin about the whirlwind change in his address, I suppose?
Yeah, no doubt, Drew. I mean, it's another one of those situations where I think the human element is so often lost in these deals. I mean, Cody Eakin woke up on a Friday morning, was getting a little bit of sun in Vegas, and with one phone call or one look at your caller ID, and you see Kelly McCrimmon's name, and generally around this time of year, if you see the general manager's number pop up, it's generally not good news. So he went in and had an emotional meeting. I mean, I understand a lot of people were wondering about body language and Cody's interviews, but I mean, this is a guy who was an original misfit. He loved being in Vegas. He wanted to finish the job with them. But after he was able to process that, he was excited about the opportunity to go back home. I mean, this is a guy who hasn't played a home game in his hometown since he was 15 years old. I mean, when he was 16, he went off to the Western League and came back as a visitor, but he's excited about the opportunity and to play at home, to do all those things, to play in front of family and friends. But most importantly, Cody is a competitor. He wants to be involved in a playoff race. No, he's no longer in a chase for first place in the division, but he's very much alive in an opportunity to help the Jets possibly make the playoffs. And I mean, the other part that he says it's no big deal, but he's not lacking motivation. I mean, he needs a new contract for the summertime. He wants to stay in the NHL and be a prominent player. And by helping the Jets make the playoffs, he certainly will help his bargaining cause, that's for sure.
Weber, we mentioned earlier you're in Edmonton. You're covering tonight's game. Patrick Laine also in Edmonton. He's traveling with the team. He's officially listed as questionable, so we don't know yet if he's going to play tonight. But if Laine is unable to play, do you overthink this if you're Paul Maurice, or do you just put Jack Roslovic in that second line wing position, or what do you expect Paul Maurice to do here? Because obviously, you know, Cody Eakin's line is either going to go up against, you know, Dreisaitl's line or Connor McDavid's line.
Yeah, you know what, Ezzy, I think that I really liked what I saw from Appleton and Eakin together. I know there was a bit of a dog's breakfast there with the 11 forwards the other day, but I think they're going to keep Roslovic with Kopp and Harkins, and I would think that Appleton just slides up with Ehlers and Eakin. For me personally, I think then you'll see Kopp go up against McDavid regularly, and then you'll also see Scheifele probably head-to-head with Connor for a good significant stretch of that time. I mean, obviously, we know that Dave Tippett has last change, but I would imagine that they would be fine with those matchups, both teams. So that head-to-head will be something to watch for. I mean, Dreisaitl closing in on triple digits here. I mean, what an exceptional year he's had. He's trying to bolster his case to be the MVP this year. So, I mean, it'll be curious. I mean, we know that CJ Cease was recalled also. Does that mean that maybe he gets a bump into the lineup? But I probably Logan Shaw just slides in. And I mean, let's be totally honest. I mean, the Jets are fortunate that it's not a broken bone for Laine, but mm-hmm. I'll personally be surprised if Patrick's in the lineup today. I mean, he is traveling, yes, but I mean, you know it had to be serious for him to not come back into the game, so I'm not expecting to play. If he does, I mean, then he has tremendous healing powers and all of that jazz, and you know that Patrick wants to be out there, so if he can be out there, he will be, but I mean, if it's a matter of giving him an extra couple of days and then he's good to go on Tuesday, I would think the Jets would err on the side of caution when it comes to a foot injury.
Now, Weber, just sticking with Mason Appleton, you know, like, he's a guy that obviously, you know, he hasn't put up huge offensive numbers, and I think the Jets would say themselves that, you know, that's not what they're expecting out of Mason Appleton, but have you been seeing a player that's maybe playing his best hockey of the year? I think he was around 15 minutes of ice time. I don't know if that was a season high, but if it wasn't, it was right up there. You know, he's playing on the penalty kill. You know, he's kind of a bit of a Swiss Army knife himself. Is this the best that you've seen? What have you seen maybe that's different in his game? Maybe the offensive numbers aren't there, but you know, to me, it looked like he was playing his best hockey last game against Washington.
Yeah, absolutely. As you know, he had a huge boost in confidence when he got that second line role for a while when he was up there. But for me, he's got his skating legs back. Obviously, I mean, speaking of it, pre-warm-up incidents this week, in light of what happened to Sammy Niku, I just think that the nature of the injury with his fractured foot from Regina at the Heritage Classic really took a while for him to get back up to speed. And Mason's the kind of guy that really needs his skating legs to be going to be really effective. I think he's been really dogged in his pursuit on the puck. I think he's a very good forechecker. He's really given the penalty kill a boost since he was added to it when he came back into the lineup. He has a feisty and physical edge. He's hard on pucks. He's putting his shoulder down and getting to the net with net drives and using his skating there. And to me, I thought all along going into this year that he could be a potential Brandon Tanev replacement, not the Tasmanian Devil style and maybe blocking 9 million shots, Brandon Tanev, but the fast and physical, agitating, getting into the face of the opponents type of player. And I do see Mason Appleton as having double-digit goal-scoring potential as well, guys. I mean, you know, it's not his forte to this point, but I do think that he could be a 10 to 15 goal a year guy, and that's the kind of hockey he's playing right now, and I agree with you. I think it's been a long stretch of him playing very well. I mean, yes, he did get bumped back down to the fourth line when Harkins moved up, but I really think that Mason Appleton's probably been the most improved Jet in the second half of this year, and I don't know that it's that close.
Ken Weeb of The Athletic is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ken joins us from Edmonton, where he'll be covering tonight's Jets-Oilers game. You know, Kenny, it's been five games now, I think, for Dylan DeMello, if I'm not mistaken, with the Winnipeg Jets. What has impressed you the most about him?
Yeah, you know what? He's just a steady player. I mean, in doing my research and talking to his junior coach and talking to Roy Sommer, who had him in the American Hockey League, I mean, Dylan DeMello is the kind of guy that is not going to wow you with his individual skill, but he does everything very well. He's solid. You can dependable. Doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He moves the puck well. One of the scouts I spoke to said, I mean, he doesn't play a big-time physical blow you up kind of game like Ben Sherratt, but he plays a firm game. He wins puck battles. He's mobile enough. good first pass. He's got a really big shot, which is one of the reasons why he's on that second power play unit. We haven't really seen it that much yet, but just a very smart player. And I mean, for me, I guess I understand that he is on that rental contract right now, but I cannot see a scenario where the Jets don't do everything in their power to make sure he's the guy who replaces Dmitry Kulikov's contract status in that, for lack of a better term, top four moving forward. I mean, are they willing to go a fourth year at somewhere around $3 million or a little higher? I'm not sure, but I mean, if we're looking at bare numbers, I mean, that would be less money than what Dmitry Kulikov's making, and I think you're going to possibly get a better, bigger contribution during that time for a 26-year-old guy who is really kind of coming into his own. And I mean, the biggest part too, we haven't even seen him with Josh Morrissey, who we expect him to be paired with once Josh is back to full health.
Weber, last question for you. We got to talk about the penalty kill. I mean, the Jets' penalty kill, I think you'd agree, was a big reason why they won that game on Thursday night against Washington. I mean, you watch all the games like we do, and you know this penalty kill has gone from one of the worst penalty kills in the league.
I believe it was called historically awful at a point in time earlier in the year.
Well, but it's true though, right, Drew? And the penalty kill was a big issue for the Jets in the first half of the season. Ken, what have you seen, you know, over the last, let's say, couple months since, you know, the early January? Is it simply a function of personnel having, you know, Andrew Kopp, Mason Appleton healthy, or is there something maybe strategic that the Jets changed over the last couple months that has allowed them to be more successful?
Yeah, I mean, the worst to first has been a bit of definitely a surprise for many. I mean, obviously, your best penalty killer is always your goaltender, and Connor Hellebuyck will deserve a lot of the credit there, but it's a combination of personnel plus confidence. I mean, when you're a penalty killer, it's not just getting into shot lanes, but it's where you can pressure point the puck. I mean, those are the things the Jets were not doing well. And when they were pressuring, they were over-pursuing and leaving backdoor tap-ins. I mean, you just haven't seen those beautiful, you know, cross-ice seam plays as readily available. I mean, and that's part of guys getting to know one another. Nick Shore has done a nice job in the penalty kill. I mean, the personnel changes came earlier on when Letestu was obviously out and Bork, it just wasn't working out for him either. But I mean, the other part of that equation in helping the penalty kill is easing the minutes or the heavy minutes for Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler when they got taken off the penalty kill for the most part, except when there were injuries or penalty killers in the box. I mean, it changed the ice time levels for them and allowed them to focus on their game also. But in terms of just the penalty kill itself, I mean, it's been a massive turnaround. And even the power play has had a couple of struggles lately, yes. But, I mean, special teams are going to be so critical during these last 16 games. And, I mean, if the Jets can continue to run somewhere around what they've been doing since January 1st, they'll give themselves a better chance to win. So we'll see how it goes. It's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of teams bunched up now in that Western Conference with the Wild getting hot now at the right time for them under Dean Evason. And a lot of teams doing a lot of chasing. But all those head-to-head games are available, so we'll see how the Jets handle.
The Jets will have a big challenge ahead of them on the penalty kill tonight as they face the league-best Edmonton Oilers, their league-best overall and league-best on home ice. So it'll be an interesting challenge for the Jets penalty killers tonight. And Kenny, like you said, we're into the stretch drive. We're through with the dog days of the year. It'll be fun from here on out for the next 16 or so games. Ken Weeble cover tonight's game between the Jets and the Oilers for The Athletic. You can read all about it post-game and then tomorrow again online. Kenny, thank you for this, buddy.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great show here.
You too, Ken. Thanks so much. When we come back, we discuss the Jets' defense and how we see them deploying without Sammy Niku and with Josh Morrissey questionable for tonight's contest. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Well, the last three, I thought they were pulling my leg, right? Okay, the guy comes in and tells you, and you're waiting for the crack, the smile, and it doesn't happen, and you're going, "That's really?" Yeah, I mean, we've been consistent, Paul. From the first car accident straight through, we've had some unusual things happen, for sure.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice addressing yet another freak injury for a team that's had a season full of freak injuries.
Like, I mean, this year has been unlike any other year in Jets history.
Lots of teams go through injuries. Every team goes through injuries for the most part. But
what about the Columbus Blue Jackets?
Well, but the way the Jets are getting injured is what makes it so unique. I mean, you had the car accident, you know, back in training camp, remember?
Yep.
Then you lose Appleton to fracturing his foot in a football game.
That was at the Heritage Classic.
You lose Calgary. Niku now week to week. And based on the way apparently he was limping out of the arena at the end of the road trip, you're not going to see Sammy Niku for a while. You lose him.
You're not a doctor, but you'll take a look.
I'll take a look, exactly. Based on you lose him on a week-to-week basis with a lower body leg injury of some sort. It's just absolutely bizarre that this Jets team continues to be riddled with injuries, particularly on the back end. Josh Morrissey, we don't know his status for tonight. I'd be a little surprised if he goes. I think he probably wants to get a full practice in. He was wearing the non-contact yesterday. But, if Morrissey is, I'm sure, able to go, the Jets will need him tonight against the Oilers. But, it's been a bizarre situation, a bizarre year for defense and the litany of injuries. And they just have to sort of next man up mentality it all the way through.
No, it really is. Like, it should be the motto. It shouldn't be stay in the fight, Drew. Like, it really should be next man up. And that's why I think it's miraculous, really, that the Jets are still in this playoff race. And the biggest injury of them all, if you think about it, was actually Dustin Byfuglien, right? Like, you throw in Brian Little, we didn't even touch on, Matty Perreault, Adam Lowry. Like, that was last segment that we were talking about that. But those guys, I mean, those are key parts of your team. Like, I realize, that Lowry and Perreault haven't been putting the puck in the net like they'd like. But, I mean, these are guys that are staples of your bottom six, right? So the injuries are incredible. And you're right. I mean, I mentioned Columbus. I mean, Columbus, it's ridiculous. When you think about Seth Jones and Cam Atkinson and Josh Anderson and Oliver Bjorkstrand, Merzlikins is injured right now, right? Like, so Columbus is up there with the Jets. I mean, the Edmonton Oilers have a ton of injuries right now as well, and they're going to get some healthy bodies. But, when you talk about James Neal and Oscar Klefbom, and the list just goes on and on and on and on. And of course, injuries are a part of hockey, but if the Jets are able to go into Edmonton tonight without Josh Morrissey, if Morrissey and Laine aren't able to play and they're able to eke out a win, Eke in a win, if you want to say that.
Yeah, no,
I mean, it would be incredible.
That's a great pun. Well done on that one. You're absolutely right. They are banged up. And I mean, you're going to need to see a similar effort to what you saw Thursday night, where it's, every guy is sacrificing. I mean, Nathan Beaulieu has just got to be a walking bruise after blocking seven shots on Thursday night. But again, you need to have that same effort tonight. You need to have that same desperation tonight. Dmitry Kulikov needs to build on what I thought was one of his best games of the season, on Thursday night. The problem for the Jets is going to be, not having last change, and Paul Maurice sends over, Beteto and Pullman, and then Dave Tippett's going to counter with McDavid or with Dreisaitl or with whomever, and all due respect to Beteto and Pullman, but that's a mismatch. But I mean, McDavid against most anybody is a mismatch, but that's the problem with the Jets not having last change tonight and not having potentially a guy like Josh Morrissey in the lineup. You're going to be really scratching and clawing and going to have to be desperate in order to be successful, but desperate times, as they say, call for desperate measures. So maybe that's not such a bad thing for a Winnipeg Jets team that is desperate.
Right. And, the Sammy Niku injury is really unfortunate, right? Because Niku had the injuries earlier this season. Mm-hmm. He's been a healthy scratch. So now you just don't have the options that you had before, right? Like, if Morrissey's healthy, that's one thing. But if Niku's not healthy, and we're assuming that there's a good chance that Morrissey plays tonight, but we just don't know, right? So, maybe Morrissey does play with Dylan DeMello, but, you mentioned Anthony Beteto there, on the third pair with Tucker Pullman. I don't mind that pair based on what the Jets have available to them, right?
Well, there's no other options on your back end.
Well, no, but Josh Morrissey and Tucker Pullman, we know they've been kind of your top pair most of the year, but they've had their struggles, right? Like, the analytics, I mean, whether it's Andrew Berkshire, or it's Sean Tierney. I mean, we've talked about, Josh Morrissey, Jacob Trouba, Dom Luchishin of The Athletic. We should give him a shout out. He does great work for The Athletic. Another guy who said Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba have really missed each other when you talk about, their complementary skill set, right? So, it's going to be a big challenge. And, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are split up now. And that first line is basically completely brand new, right? Because you've got Tyler Ennis and Andreas Athanasiou on that top line.
Athanasiou injured. He won't play tonight, though, for the Oilers.
I think there's a chance he might play.
I thought he was out a couple weeks based on the injury that he suffered. Where was it, in Vegas?
You might have read something else, but I thought maybe he was a possibility, but
we'll find out certainly soon enough, especially when we talk to Dave Jameson in the final hour of the program tonight.
It's a bit of, and that's the thing, that's the weakness of the Oilers, is that they still are top heavy. Even if you split up McDavid and Draisaitl, and
you're right, I'm wrong. I apologize. Athanasiou should be healthy enough to play tonight.
That's fine. Yeah. I mean, this time of year, Drew, there's so many question marks. Like, it goes back to what we were saying about the Oilers and their injuries. James Neal has been out, I believe, a month. I think he's got an ankle injury, if I'm not mistaken. Oscar Klefbom, I don't think, is going to play tonight. But when you're talking about Klefbom, that's one of your top defensemen, right? So the Oilers aren't going to have Klefbom tonight. And
so unless, the Jets need to take advantage of that. As much as the Oilers need to take advantage of the Jets' injuries, the Jets need to take advantage of a banged-up Oilers team as well. By the way,
I think you might have been thinking about Mike Green. He's out 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay, sorry.
So Mike Green definitely is not playing tonight, and he was obviously acquired prior to the trade deadline. So no Mike Green, no Oscar Klefbom. So, you know, The Oilers are depleted as well. So there's no excuses. The Jets aren't going to use injuries as an excuse. The Oilers aren't going to use injuries as an excuse. This time of year, I mean, the Oilers right now, they're in a battle for their playoff lives. Like, they could be a wild card team as well.
Well, if Calgary plays in Tampa Bay tonight, and Calgary's a much better away team than they are a road team. They're sub 500 at home. If Calgary was to win today in Tampa Bay, they would leapfrog Edmonton, pending the outcome of the Jets and the Oilers, into one of the top three spots in the Pacific. And Edmonton could drop back to being, you know, a wild card team, or conceivably could drop right out of being a playoff team altogether. So, you know, these games are, even though, you know, the battle for the Jets is for one of the wild card spots, the battle for the Pacific Division teams is both for the wild card spots and for a top three spot in the Pacific. Vegas is beginning to pull away there, but Vancouver and Edmonton are tied with 74 points. Calgary is one behind at 73 points, and they got a little bit of space between them and Arizona, as the Coyotes have fallen back to 70 points in the Western Conference
that
playoff
Pacific
race.
That Pacific division is a complete coin flip. Like, yeah. Vegas picks up 2 points. We talked about that. So they've separated themselves
Vegas
up by
won,
six.
What,
but
10 in a row?
Well, it's like nobody wants to take hold of second, right? Yeah. Like, Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, Arizona, like, they've all had their opportunity to put a stranglehold on second place, and nobody's done anything with it.
When we come back, Michael Trakos of Post Media joins us. We'll talk to Michael about the trade deadline, put a bow on what was, of course, a very busy day in the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates will apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He's the senior writer for Post Media. He's our good friend of our program. His name is Michael Trakos. Michael, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
Doing very well, Michael. Thanks for joining us on a Saturday morning. Appreciate your time, as always. Thought we'd bring you on, you know, take a look around the NHL, a post-trade deadline world around the NHL. So, you know, I guess we'll get into some individual trades, but I guess on an overall basis, what did you think of the activity from Monday and the NHL's trade deadline?
Well, there's a lot of quantity, that's for sure. I think this was one of the busier trade deadlines, but when you look at the actual star talent that moved from team to team, it was a little underwhelming. Like, we were talking big about, really, Robin Lehner might have been one of the bigger names moving, or Andreas Athanasiou going to Edmonton. So that tells you kind of the quality of player that was being moved. But that being said, some teams, you know, made two or three moves that significantly, I think, upgraded their team and put themselves maybe not in a Stanley Cup position, but definitely in a spot to make the playoffs and maybe go a round or two deep.
You know, Mike, just sticking with the trade deadline for a second, were you one of the people that thought that the Toronto Maple Leafs probably were better served to not make too many moves? I realize Tyson Barrie's name was out there, and, you know, some fans wanted the Leafs to acquire a defenseman or maybe another forward, even though that's probably not what the Leafs need. But, you know, considering that the Leafs picked up that big win over Florida, and now they're 4 points ahead of the Panthers, and they're kind of firmly entrenched in that third playoff spot, I mean, would any one player out there, to your point, really have made this team, you know, just more than just maybe first round fodder for the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Yeah, it's a good point. Like, in hindsight now, you wish that they had gotten a defenseman if you're a fan or management. But, you know, really, there's only two reasons why you add at the deadline. It's either to, like, rescue a team, add a piece, or to reward a team that's really playing well and saying, you know, here's that extra piece that could get you past maybe round three or whatever. I don't think the Leafs are in any position. I think the move that they made, really, I guess, a month earlier in getting Jack Campbell and Kyle Clifford, really filled two big needs for them, and that was sort of the rescue. Like, they needed a backup goalie. They really needed a kind of a starting goaltender while Frederik Andersen was still getting over an injury. And I think Kyle Clifford, while he's not a big-name guy and he's only playing on the fourth line, he added a dimension the Leafs were sorely missing in the physicality department. And, you know, just ancillary, I think the addition of Kyle Clifford is, you know, you look at the last two games and Kasperi Kapanen has gotten a pair of fights and you've seen Austin Matthews throw his body around a little bit more. I definitely think that's a direct relation of having a guy like Clifford there and, you know, him setting the tone or him playing a certain way. Guys feed off that. So that being said, at the deadline, I was thinking that really they still needed to grab a defenseman or two. Didn't have to be a huge name. I think Dylan DeMelo would have been perfect. Even grabbing Zach Bogosian would have sufficed a depth move for them. So, you know, they're similar to, like, I guess they're built very similar to how Winnipeg is built, where you've got a goaltender that you trust back there. You've got tons of offense, but it's the back end that really is their Achilles heel. And I don't think, you know, while Winnipeg addressed that and maybe should have addressed it even more so, I don't think Toronto did quite a good enough job in that department.
You know, Mike, just sticking with the Leafs, and we obviously want to get to some other teams here, but, you know, I mean, it's pretty inevitable that the Leafs are going to play the Lightning in the first round, and I think you'd agree the Lightning on paper are much more skilled, but in a sense, maybe, is this a good thing for the Leafs, and are the Leafs not getting enough credit? Like, maybe they will take this to seven games like they have against the Bruins in previous years. Obviously, they hope that they're able to win Game 7, but look at what happened with the Lightning last year. Everybody had them sweeping the Blue Jackets, and obviously the opposite happened, and the Blue Jackets advanced to the second round. But if Austin Matthews, John Tavares, Mitch Marner, if they're clicking, and Freddie Andersen outplays Andre Vasilevsky, I mean, are not enough people giving credit to the Leafs? Maybe they are able to get out of that first round and maybe even go further?
No, I agree with you. I think when you've got game breakers, especially in playoff time, that can be the difference between like a 1-1 deadlock and, you know, things get tighter and people say, oh, because it's tighter, you need defensive hockey. But I would argue because it gets tighter, it's a time for those like Patrick Kane's of the world and Austin Matthews of the world and, you know, Mark Scheifele's, Patrick Laine's. Those are the time where those guys can really open up a game. And, you know, Toronto's power play is so deadly. And, you know, when you're talking about Matthews and Marner right now, they're just feeding so well off each other, and they can turn a 3-goal deficit into really like a 5-4 win in a matter of minutes, and they've done it numerous times this year. Obviously, it's not a recipe for long-term sustainability, success, and all that, but I'm with you. In a 7-game series, if those guys get hot, and I'm talking as if these guys have been cold all year, like they've been hot all year, that's not the problem. Toronto's area that they're lacking in is not goals. They can score at will. So, you know, as long as Frederik Andersen is playing at a level that he was earlier in the year, I think Toronto can be a very dangerous opponent and can be one of those dark horse teams that, you know, if they just kind of maybe get over that first round hump, take a lot of the pressure off, I wouldn't be wanting to face them.
Michael Trakos is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Michael is the senior hockey writer for Post Media. Michael, the Jets lost to the Philadelphia Flyers last Saturday. And, you know, prior to that game, I admittedly had not been paying enough attention to the Flyers and their impressive performance this year. As far as I can tell, almost nobody is talking about them as a legitimate contender, despite the fact that they are second in a very challenging metropolitan division. Why is that?
They're finally getting goaltending guys, whether it's Brian Elliott or Carter Hart. Both guys are giving them something that the Flyers just haven't had for the longest time. And you really have to go back and flip through the history book to find time when they were getting just consistent goaltending. And you know what, like, they're a pretty, like, deep team. When you look at it, like, Giroux's not having a great year, but he's still putting up points. Voracek is still doing that. Travis Konecny is having a career year. Their defense is really good. So good that Shane Gostisbehere has been like a healthy scratch for a lot this season. So, yeah, the Flyers are one of those sneaky teams. And, you know, you could say that about a lot of the teams in the Metro. Like, I don't think anyone expected the Metropolitan Division to be this deep and this good when the season began. I think most of us, and myself included, would have assumed that, you know, the two wild card spots were going to come out of the Atlantic, whether it was going to be Florida or Buffalo or Montreal. The fact that, you know, there could be a really good Metropolitan team out of the playoffs and maybe having possibly even more points than the third place team in the Atlantic is a huge surprise. So I'm with you. Whether it's the Flyers, the Islanders, the Hurricanes, or the Blue Jackets, there's some really good teams out there in the Metro that could really serve another upset this year.
You know, Mike, I really thought you were going to say the Rangers there, but it was going to lead really well into my question. But, you know, was there any worse possible news than Chris Kreider fracturing his foot last night? Because, you know, the Rangers win 9 of 10 games. Obviously, the Flyers won last night, but it was looking like such an incredible story. Artemi Panarin, you know, arguably, you know, Hart Trophy candidate, you know, just everything the Rangers have gone through. It looked like they were going to be a bottom five in the Eastern Conference, you know, a couple of months ago. And, you know, now they're 3 or 4 points out of a playoff spot. But did they have any chance if Chris Kreider is done for the season?
I would still say they still have a chance because, you know, you just mentioned Artemi Panarin's been good. The goaltending, like, what's his name, gets hurt in a car accident.
Shesterkin.
And yeah, and it just seems like they just have more bodies than I think a lot of us are kind of are really giving them credit for. But in regards to Kreider, it could have been a lot worse. Like, how about if this guy wasn't signed to an extension already? And yeah. Oh, geez, we just lost our own rental for nothing, basically. So it's good news that Kreider's at least going to be there for another 7 years. Well, we'll say it's good news. We'll see how those final 2 or 3 years go. But I still, you know, I'm holding out hope just for how good of a story it would be that the Rangers get in there. And if they do, I'm with you on Panarin. I think he's going to steal a lot of votes away from Dreisaitl and McDavid and, you know, possibly MacKinnon as well. And he could either finish first or second for that trophy, and it would be well-deserved because, like you said, offensively, aside from him, there's not a whole lot of players that you're really wowed about.
Last question for you, Michael. Michael Tracos, senior hockey writer for Post Media, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Vegas goes out, they acquire Alec Martinez for the couple of second-round draft picks. They go out, they acquire Robin Lehner to really address what has been a weakness for their team all year round, goaltending. Does that maybe make them the favorite in the Pacific Division and potentially a threat to a team like the Blues or the Avalanche for the top of the Western Conference?
I think so. I said in my column this week that I'm picking Tampa against Vegas in the final. I'm sticking with that. I don't see a weakness on Vegas's roster. Offensively, they're deep. The back end solidified, and now I think Fleury's the kind of player over his career that he plays better when there's a guy breathing down his neck. And now you've got a best 1-2 punch, I think, in hockey, in Fleury and Lehner. So, well coached team as well. I think they just have the size and the skill to get through St. Louis, Colorado, and whoever else they might face in the West. And I really like them. And, you know, just a side note, in terms of the Eastern Conference teams who I really liked at the deadline, love what the Hurricanes did this year. You know, that's a team that really wanted to build on the momentum. And I think, you know, getting Brady Shea loading up on defense and the trade they swung with Florida to get Vincent Trocheck, it was huge for them. So I really like Carolina sort of following the Columbus Blue Jackets blueprint and sort of going for it and realizing that, you know what, they need to reward their players for what's been a really good season.
I suppose this is where I insert a comment about David Ayers and the fact that the Leafs are still trying to get a shot on goal in the third period of that game.
So what a crazy story. And, you know, I'm going to the GM meetings tomorrow in Florida, and, you know, that's going to be a hot topic and how they address the emergency backup position for goaltenders. And I think everyone wants this story to continue and wants it to kind of happen again, a la the whole John Scott at the All-Star game thing. But, you know, it could have went off the rails, let's face it, boys. And it's good that it was a feel-good story, but imagine if Toronto scored 7 goals in that third period. Be a totally different conversation today.
Well, Mike, you know, David Ayres was a successful backup for an e-bug for the Carolina Hurricanes. We're just happy that we're your e-bus emergency backup hockey show.
Oh, man, that was terrible.
That was terrible. I mean, go leave the studio. Don't come back for at least 20 minutes and think about what you just did. I apologize on behalf of Illegal Curve and Illegal Curve Hockey Enterprises for my
colleague
over here.
You don't like that e-bus? What's wrong with that?
It was terrible. It was absolutely terrible.
You guys make me laugh, so call me anytime, please.
Thank you, Michael. We'll try and keep Ezzy away from you from now on.
All
have
right.
a good one. Enjoy Florida.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy your cold weather in Winnipeg.
And we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Mike.
Bye.
Michael Draco, senior hockey writer of Post Media, joining us on the line. When we come back, we apologize again for Ezra's terrible sense of humor, and we'll discuss what are we talking about. We're going to discuss.
I don't think that was that bad.
That was pretty terrible. We'll take the poll from people in the audience. If you think that was a bad joke by Ezzy, send us a tweet at Illegal Curve, or you can text us 129090 to reach us.
If anything, it was original.
It was original, but it was stupid. That doesn't make it any better. When we come back, we talk about the Jets' penalty kill from historically awful to the best in the calendar year 2020. What's the catalyst for the turnaround? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
They did a great job, obviously. They didn't score any goals on us. And I don't think they had any huge chances on the power play. We were able to stress them enough to make them make mistakes, and we got the puck out. So that feels good and makes us feel more confident.
Post game from Thursday, that's Nikolaj Ehlers talking about the Jets' impressive penalty kills stifling the Washington Capitals when they had basically what was a 4-minute consecutive man advantage, and the Jets said nothing doing to the Caps as they pushed for the equalizer at that point in time. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friend, Dr. Les Rikus, and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Before we went to break, I asked the audience what they thought about Ezzy's joke. So far, by an overwhelming margin of 3-1, Ezzy, your joke has been deemed to be terrible. We have Kurt saying that was a terrible, terrible joke. We have the Canadian Beaver saying it was a brutal joke. We have our buddy Rowdy listening from the Netherlands saying, is there an emergency backup for Ezzy? He needs to be pulled off the air after that joke. Your one praise came from Bob. Bob says he liked it as tough crowd.
Thanks, Bob. I mean, first of all, I don't know Kurt, so fair enough, Kurt didn't like the joke. But
well, no, not just Kurt. Kurt didn't like the joke. Canadian Beaver didn't like the joke. Rowdy didn't like the joke.
Well, the fact that Canadian Beaver didn't like my joke,
That's a blow. I mean, that's a blow to you. That's a blow to you. I mean, you guys.
I expected that from Rowdy. No, I'm just kidding. But, I mean, you know, sometimes your jokes bomb, Drew.
Yeah.
I mean, you know this from Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. I mean, you know, you're not.
You would never make the stage there based on that attempt at humor.
I might make the stage if I pass out on the stage.
Well, that's something, a separate issue altogether that we can deal with at a later date and time, I suppose. But again, our apologies for Ezzy's terrible joke earlier on.
I like it.
Something that's not been terrible has been the Winnipeg Jets power play, penalty kill over the past 2 months. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where we were really talking about the Jets penalty kills being historically bad.
Yep.
Where they were giving up easily a goal a game, sometimes more than a goal a game, and the Jets almost had no answers, and it was going to be a huge detriment to their success on the season. Since January 1st, you know, new calendar year, the Winnipeg Jets have the absolute best penalty kill in the entire NHL with a success rate of 86.8%. How surprised are you at this turnaround for the Jets penalty kill?
Well, you know, you talked about January and, you know, just talking about February, you've had 14 games here for the Jets and the penalty kill is 93%.
Yeah.
Like you're talking
31 for 33
right.
in their yeah. past 14 games.
Right. And the month is almost over, right? Like this is the last day of the month. So the fact that the Jets have only given up 2 goals in 1 month, even though it's a short month, it doesn't matter. Like, yeah, I'm a little bit surprised, Drew, because, you know, you talk about, you know, the first half of the season and it was at the bottom for the entire first half of the season, right? So you're talking about January, it's turned around, and, you know, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press had an article about it, and I do think personnel has something to do with it. Like, Nick Shore has been a really good penalty killer. Obviously, Andrew Kopp, Mason Appleton, and, you know, Dylan DeMello is a guy who's a very good penalty-killing defenseman. You have to throw in Nathan Beaulieu as well. Like, you forget, Beaulieu missed a bunch of games. Huh. I forget exactly how many games he missed, but I want to say, like, you know, 10 or 12 games blocking shots. Like, he was injured blocking a shot. And so Nathan Beaulieu, we mentioned earlier, he played 25 minutes on Thursday night.
Blocked seven shots also.
Right. And, you know, I think he was around 3 minutes of penalty kill time, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, Beaulieu. So it's personnel, but it's also a little bit of strategy. And you hear about, you know, zone entries. We know that, you know, if you give a team too much of an easy zone entry, then obviously they have more time to set up and they get more zone time and all of that. But, you know, watching the penalty kill, and I think I was watching the penalty kill more closely on Thursday night against Washington maybe than in previous games. And there's no doubt in my mind that the Jets are attacking the puck carrier and being more aggressive. Mm-hmm. And I think, Drew, any team in the NHL or any level of hockey, I mean, you want to be aggressive. Like, you don't want to just kind of resort to that box and then let a team set up and pass the puck around the perimeter so they can get a really good one-timer. Like, every team wants to be aggressive. But I think if you're comparing the last 2 months to the previous 3 months, right, so October, November, December,
yeah,
I think you've seen a much more concerted effort for the Jets to be aggressive. And you're talking about at the line and in the zone. So, you know, you got to give the Jets coaching staff credit
for
making adjustments, because I think they realize that. I mean, the Jets coaching staff is not oblivious to what's going on out there. I mean, they knew that their penalty kill was atrocious at one point, worst in the league, and they've addressed it. And, you know, they've changed their personnel. You know, Cody Eakin is another guy that you can say whatever you want about him, but he's a guy that can kill penalties. So now the Jets have, you know, 6, 7, 8 guys they can put out there for the penalty kill, and they don't have to put out Mark Scheifele. They don't have to put out Blake Wheeler.
Well,
and they don't even have to put out Josh Morrissey.
Well, we talked about that with Ken Wiebe back in hour number one about the ability, you know, to take Scheifele and Wheeler off of the penalty kill, keep them a little bit fresher, give them more minutes at 5-on-5 and maybe more minutes on the power play, for better or worse, than they had been playing because they had the penalty kill responsibilities. To me, that is such a huge advantage, you know, for the Jets. Not even an advantage, but it's just a huge benefit of the penalty kill being better, is that you're freeing up your best players to play in more offensively inclined situations than strictly having to run them into the ground by playing them in all situations because your penalty kill was struggling to stay afloat for so long earlier in the year.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we talked about, you know, Washington, how good the penalty kill was when Neil Pionk and Anthony Boteto took those minors back-to-back late in the second period. And you mentioned it earlier, like the Oilers, not only do the Oilers have a great power play, if you actually add up the penalty kill and the power play, the Oilers have the best special teams in the league.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not a guarantee that special teams are going to factor into tonight's game. And it's possible that, you know, we don't see that many penalties. And
the Jets don't take very many penalties,
well, no,
which has also been a blessing for them this season, is that they've been, you know, for years, we remember how they were one of the most heavily penalized teams in the league. This year, they certainly have been a lot better at staying out of the box.
Right. But the point I was trying to make was that just because the Oilers score a power play goal tonight doesn't mean that that's going to be the determining factor in the game. That's all I was saying. But when you're going up against a team like the Oilers, there's a good chance that if you do give them a power play or a couple of power plays or whatever, that they're going to make you pay because they're that talented with McDavid and Dreisaitl, and we know all the names. And now, you know, you've added a guy like Andreas Athanasiou on the top line. You know, he's a guy that's going to get some power play time. So they have a lot of good weapons. So it's important this time of year when you're going up against teams like the Capitals and the Oilers and the Golden Knights. I mean, I don't think the Jets would be in a playoff race right now if their penalty kill was where it was the first 3 months of the season. Like, we talked about this, and you mentioned this earlier. I mean, it was the reason they were losing games. They were pretty much giving up a power play goal or two every game.
And you can't overcome that.
Right.
That's just it's not realistic to give up, you know, two goals or a goal and a half or a goal on the man advantage every game and expect to have success in terms of wins and losses. It's just not realistic.
Right. And you know, Connor Hellebuyck, you know, we talked about this with Ken Weep. Obviously, you know, Hellebuyck has been unbelievable, and the month of November was probably his best month. And then, you know, towards the end of December and January, his numbers started to take a little bit of a hit, and now he's back to where he was before. So he deserves a lot of credit for how good the penalty kill's been. Mm-hmm. But I really do think that the personnel deserves a lot of credit. Like, Andrew Kopp is a really good penalty killer. Like,
Mason Appleton is turning into a pretty good penalty killer.
Yeah, Mason Appleton is a really good penalty killer, and Mason Appleton wasn't somebody they were putting out there. Obviously, his injury factored in. He was injured for a month and a half.
Yeah, but so obviously,
right. So they just have more depth, and you know, it's just been a huge reason why they're still in the playoff race, and a big reason why they're winning games.
Yeah. Texter sending in a comment saying that your joke was bad enough that he had to send a text to say how bad it was. So, you know, the consensus is really overwhelming for once that that was a bad joke.
You know, I'm almost proud that people are this upset.
Well, I don't know if they're upset. I think they're just...
I'm proud that they think this is that bad of a joke. I mean, it's a dad joke, I guess. I don't know.
It was a dad joke. It definitely was a dad joke, and you are a dad, so you do get credit for that. But yeah, it was a bad joke. Consensus is. Consensus says that it was a bad joke.
How many times are you going to say it's a bad joke?
I really enjoy saying that it was a bad joke because it was that bad of a joke.
At least I'm coming up with jokes. You got nothing, Mindell.
I got something. I know that was a bad joke. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Western Conference playoff standings. We'll talk more about tonight's Jets and Oilers game. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.